Baby, now you ready. Baby, now you ready.
Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Jesse Hall. How are you doing, Jesse?
All things considering, I'm doing good. Packers football might come to an end, but I'm doing well.
Yeah, we'll rip off the band-aid right here. The Packers' playoff runs has ended for the 2021 season. Unfortunately, losing in the divisional round 13-10 to the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, to the victor go the spoils, and to the victor, welcome back to the podcast, Ryan Edvard-Arada, Full Press 49ers Managing Editor. How are you doing?
All things considered, I cannot complain right now.
Congratulations, I'll tell you that. Good job on the win.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Right. Well, you might as well finish the whole deal now, right?
Honestly, I'm almost hoping for it for complete chaos, because then what are the 49ers doing with Garoppolo if he wins the Super Bowl? Or, okay, you know, do they trade Trey Lance to the Packers? I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'm getting too ahead of myself there. But, the 49ers moving on. And funny enough, they'll be facing a familiar foe as the Los Angeles Rams also won their game. That was a score of 30-27. Walk-off field goal, same thing as the Packers game, just with a lot more points involved. But yeah, we'll touch on that a little bit later. But NFC West championship almost, it seems like, as well as the NFC championship, of course.
Yeah, I guess before we start, if you take your Packers fandom out of it, what a crazy divisional round. It probably the greatest divisional round of all times. It was insane games, especially that last one, but at least it was enjoyable outside of, you know, our misery.
I mean, there were parts of the Packers game I was really happy for.
Yeah, first drive was great.
I mean, even the second drive was looking good up until the Mercedes Lewis fumble, but yeah, turnovers kind of, was that the Packers' only turnover of the game?
Yeah.
Key time. What a momentum killer. And I mean, we know that exists in football, but Packers up 7-0, driving, looking like they're at least going to make it 10-0. And then Mercedes Lewis on his only catch of the game. I don't know if maybe that's the last catch of his career. That would be unfortunate for him in that sense. Because Rodgers loves those roll out the tight end underneath and hope to get an easy first down that way, or at least not set up an easier play on the next down. And then fumbled, and it seemed like the play calling for Matt LaFleur got completely out of sync afterwards. They had a great plan going forward, and then that happened, and then from there, I don't know, it seems like they were, you know, they seemed like they panicked, really.
100%. That play right there, which shouldn't have changed the game that early, and it altered everything. They totally went in the shell. The play calling, Aaron Rodgers threw the ball to two other passes to other guys the rest of the game. Like, terrible. Terrible. After that first drive and how, like, methodically they went down the field, and you weren't going to slow that down. It was just a perfect start to the game, right? Had the defense on their on ice skates, and then, you know, get the ball right back. And Mercedes Lewis, you know, Mr. Reliable, doesn't make mistakes and has that fumble. And, you know, great teams recover from it, and not so great teams don't. And unfortunately, that was us.
Yeah, the Green Bay, which there's a lot more to, you know, that we're gonna cover and complain about. But they never rebounded from that. And it was too early for that to be that big of a deal. And it was I guess I'm rambling right now, but kind of a black eye to Matt LaFleur, as great as he is, you know, as a coach. And I think he is really good and still young, but
now three playoff games where it just seems like he started coaching scared and gets out coached and he loses his edge. And he even kind of admitted that in his press conference, that he let everybody down with how he coached the game. Well, how many times
can you say that before it's like, why is this always happening? So just very unfortunate, because this was a good team.
Yeah, but as you're saying, maybe not a great team, though, unfortunately. But Ryan, what were your thoughts on that opening possession touchdown for the Packers and then the fumble on the very next drive?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that first drive, you could just see that the Packers offense kind of had a game plan, and they had, you know, they'd been obviously working for the last week or so, like just kind of planning for that opening drive. And that second drive, you know, right around midfield when it happened. And I mean, it was a great play by Fred Warner to even, you know, have that chance to make that, to force the fumble. But after that, it became a matter of, it just seemed like the Packers offense was trying just not to turn the ball over. And I don't know if it was a thing of just like Aaron Rodgers not trusting his receivers, because they were open receivers a lot of the games. And just like Jesse mentioned, other than Mercedes Lewis, I think there was, I want to say there was just one other, I think one receiver. I'm not sure if that was like MVS or someone had one reception, and the other 18 or so completions were to, I believe it was like Aaron Jones and to Adams. So, I mean, there were a lot of plays that were left in the field by that offense that there were guys open, there were blocks that, you know, there were holes open, and they just made the mistake. So I'm not going to be too hard on LaFleur as I could be. I think a lot of it came down to the execution on the field, because I saw when I was watching the replay, I saw a lot of times where receivers were open downfield, and it was as if Rodgers just didn't want to, you know, bother with it, and just kind of like either ate it or just threw it, you know, threw it to a check down guy who happened to be Joe.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. Right. A lot of it was execution. One play in particular, even Rodgers said, he's like, I don't even know why I couldn't pull the trigger, but it was Alan Lazard. He was running wide open behind the coverage. I mean, that he could have punted it. Oh, I shouldn't say that, because it probably would have been blocked, but he could have just thrown it up there and it's an easy six. I mean, there's nobody around. They're doubling Adams, and he forced it towards Adams. And that's just one example, but that was an easy play that any day of the week he takes it, right? And he just, for whatever reason, he just is so stubborn with his trust after a mistake or after a turnover, where it's almost as bad as, you know, just not even, you know, going after it. Some quarterbacks will make a mistake and then they'll make another one. Well, aren't you really making a mistake if you quit throwing the ball too? So, yeah, just very unfortunate. I guess that's going to be my word of the night.
Okay. I was trying to hold off my rants until later in the episode, but you guys are kind of like backing me into this, because I guess this is the perfect time to transition. So, I mean, first off, I think the lack of trust, some key injuries in this game that were, you know, went into the week kind of almost expecting them to play, and then suddenly no Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And so they ended up using Adams as that deep threat, clear out more, or Lazard. And it seems like, as you're saying, Rodgers doesn't trust Lazard on the deep routes, just on the shorter possession stuff or red zone thing, targets. And then I think the bigger one, though, was no David Bakhtiari. And I mean, I don't think Billy Turner played particularly poorly at all, but I just think it would have been maybe the protection wouldn't have necessarily even been better with Bakhtiari, but Rodgers would have trusted it more, maybe. So I think you guys are right to kind of focus in on the trust aspects of this, because it did seem like, that's kind of maybe the only way to explain this. You look at the numbers, which you kind of referenced it, Ryan. Two receptions all day from receivers not named Adams or Jones. We've mentioned the Mercedes Lewis, which was a fumble, so not a great play, obviously, and then Alan Lazard. But I looked at that Lazard play. It was third down. It was a, you know, it was one like typical Aaron Rodgers throw, throwing it away from the defender and low. So, okay, you know, you're trusting your receivers to go down and make great catches. So he certainly trusted Lazard on that play. And what do you know? Lazard goes down, grabs it off the ground, perfect technique, moves the chains. You know, change. I thought that was going to be maybe a changeup, because that was fairly late in the game, and it was like, that's Lazard's first target. Okay, maybe now that's the thing that gets going, and he'll get, you know, 2-3 catches towards the end of the game. Sometimes it tends to be the way with Lazard. It goes with long stretches without targets, but that was his only target. I can't fathom that. And I mean, even if it's, because I'm usually team like if Adams is one on one, just target him every time. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Adams getting 11 targets for 9 catches. Jones 10 targets for 9 catches. Okay, I mean, a lot of the yards off the 175 yard play, but you know, not. I mean, he's a talented receiver, so putting the ball in his hands I don't usually have a problem with it. But I'd say it's all the other receivers. How does Dominic Daphne get twice as many targets as Alan Lazard? That I don't understand, because he couldn't. I mean, he didn't catch either. DeGuara, one target, didn't catch it. I mean, Cobb, who barely played. I mean, there was the one target at the end, but you could tell he really clearly wasn't 100%. Maybe, probably should have just not even played, to be honest. And again, I've got another rant about maybe players not having to play a specific game or shouldn't have played a specific game. But yeah, one target for Alan Lazard. I don't even care about everyone else, but one target for Alan Lazard doesn't make sense to me because he's really been proving it. I don't understand what Rodgers doesn't trust about Lazard, because at times he's kind of really spoken up. But this year, it's he's talking up Adams and he's talking up Valdes-Scantling, but I don't get it. Because to me, Lazard does nothing but perform all year. I think he's been the Packers' second-best receiver for quite a while, and I'm perfectly okay with it, because I think he's very talented. But yeah, I don't get it. Now, that baffles me more than anything. Maybe that's where we put the most fault on Aaron Rodgers, is just not getting the ball to Alan Lazard enough, which is a weird thing to say, right? But that's what I don't know. That's kind of, I don't know. I'm rambling too, Jesse. You got me in that mood.
Well, and you're right. Like, we knew what San Francisco was going to do. They're going to come with four, and they're going to get pressure with four because they're that good up front. And then they're going to basically try to take Davante Adams out of the game. And that's exactly what they tried, right? You know, they forced coverage over there. So that's giving you one-on-one looks with other guys. Now, I'm not going to – yes, Alan Lazard – is good enough to win a few of those, right? I'm not going to say he's, you know, the second coming and he one-on-one he's going to beat everybody. But he should get more opportunities. I agree. Like, he's going to win, especially with his size and his frame, he should be able to win a few matchups with, you know, cold weather, all this stuff. He can be a bully. And they just didn't give him those opportunities. And you could see that with Rodgers. It wasn't like that. Yeah, he was sacked five times. Three of them were on him. Three of them were over 3 seconds. Because he just was holding the ball and waiting and waiting and waiting for Adams to try to find a way to get open. And the first matchup, you look at it, the ball came out quick because it had to. It had to come out quick. And it was just when he could be decisive and just get your first read and your second read and get it out, he was great. And this game is like, okay, I'm going to say screw all those other reads and I'm just going to wait for Adams. And obviously when that happens, we see the results of it. So, and that's not taking away nothing from that Niners defense, because they are really good, but we should have scored more than what we did on offense. Our offense is too good to be held to that. And that's not a slight in any means. It's just this offense should be able to put up, you know, 14, 17 points on anybody.
The two units to me that deserve a ton of credit, well, maybe you could say 49ers special teams. I don't know if I give them a ton of credit. It is just like just easily doing your job. You know, like walking down the street, like it seemed like that's that easy. But anyway, rant, that's a future rant in this episode. But both defenses, I thought, played phenomenally, because that's the thing. Like, the reason that Rodgers wasn't pulling the trigger, it wasn't easy. The 49ers really did make it difficult. Crowding up the secondary, a lot of different looks and coverages, really tried to confuse them, which is what you need to do, because if you leave it so simple and so easy and you leave Adams one-on-one, they'll just connect every time. So like I've already said, so obviously, if they only allowed the Packers to score 10 points, you have to think the 49ers defense played amazing, which they did. But man, did the Packers defense. This was an all-time great defensive performance, I think, from the Packers that the offense, frankly, wasted. So, just a little bit of propaganda. My whole Devondre Campbell as team MVP, I think, rings true after this game. And I'm going to revert back to that and say that I'm sticking with that. My 2021 Packers MVP is Devondre Campbell. And maybe Aaron Rodgers had it before this game and lost it. And I know, normally, yeah, vote for MVP for the regular season, but whatever. I mean, I'm giving it to Campbell, so kudos to the defense.
Yeah, I mean, you can give it to whoever you want, and I agree with you, because both teams played championship-level defense. They really did. Like you said, I can't remember the last time the Green Bay defense showed up in a big game that well. They were on fire. They were playing fast. You know, they played tight, sticky coverage, none of this soft man's crap or the soft zone crap. They were amazing, right? Both teams. They both played lights out. And I guess that's why it's so disheartening, because we knew San Francisco was going to play defense. And we knew Green Bay had a defense, you know, that can show up. I didn't expect that. Rashawn Gary became a star, because as good as those guys on the Niners, he was right in the same boat with, like, Bosa getting pressure and just taking the game over. And the offense and special teams let them down. And it's really sad, because it's like, why can't the Packers ever play a complete game or even close to complete game on all levels? I mean, I'm not even asking special teams to play great. I'm just asking them to show up. But, you know, if we could get those performances on a more regular level, wow, you could be saying something. So
Great defenses, both sides. That was fun. And you know, that's what playoff football is about at times, too. In this new era of high-scoring offenses, seeing some defenses going out there and just knocking the snot out of each other, that's fun to see, too.
So, Jesse, I'm not sure I want the Packers special teams to show up. I think, okay, forget punting. Let's just go for fourth down every time. They might have more success. Okay. I'm kidding a little bit. Maybe not entirely, though. Ryan, do want to ask you, did you have any topics that you wanted to cover before we get into the big special teams rant, which is basically like the deciding moments of this game and factors really do come down to special teams?
You know, it was really interesting because a lot of the talk about leading up to the game was about how, you know, Aaron Rodgers was finally going to get this home game. The 49ers were finally going to have to play in the elements. And it was interesting watching the game because it looked like both teams struggled because of the weather. You know, at least in circles where a lot of 49er fans and even some of the writers, they've been sharing like the interview that Aaron Rodgers gave after the 2019 NFC Championship game, where he basically said he wants one of these games at home in like 20 degree weather. They're going to have to come to our house and show that they can do this. And it came down to the fact that like both offenses, like, yeah, they struggled, but both, and because both defenses were very good, but also both offenses just made a lot of mistakes. As much as, you know, Aaron Rodgers missed open receivers and the fumble from Lewis, that whole first quarter at least, and first half was 49er receivers just dropping passes. And it's, you know, a lot of times you'll hear people talk about, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, and deservedly so, you know, like he struggles at times, but there were multiple throws. Like there was one to Kittle relatively early, hits him right in the hands, and Kittle goes for a body catch. And if he catches it cleanly, he's either gone for a touchdown on a long run, or he's setting up a field goal. Same thing with some other plays. And you see those plays happening, and it just became a team, you know, which team makes the fewest mistakes in this game. And ultimately, that's what decided the game. It wasn't so much of the offensive, you know, the defense is just shutting down the offenses, which it partially was, but these offenses, and then eventually the special teams just started making too many mistakes. So it's just, you can't overcome that.
Right. I agree. You know, the big, we want to play in the cold and come to Lambeau in playoffs, maybe in the 90s, you know, that's how it was. But now I hate to say it, but now it's just talk, right? Because we're 7-7 since the Super Bowl, not getting it done at home, cold weather games. You know, I don't see this big advantage. You know, you can say it is, and you can talk all this stuff, but right now, and unfortunately, you know, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer. Not everybody wins it every year, but when does it get to a point where you're kind of just talking? Because that cold weather game that we were supposed to dominate in, we sure did it. You know, on the offense, like you said, making these mistakes, a team that practices in these elements, and we're making these simple mistakes just like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm cold. I'm frozen here. I'm drawing a blank. I have no idea what to say. But yeah, that certainly the Packers offense ran cold. And we can skip towards the end of the game because basically nothing happened scoring wise. Like that A.J. Dillon touchdown were the only points of the first half. I know the Packers had a field goal attempt blocked. Did that happened in the second quarter, right?
Yeah, right before half. Pretty big momentum change, right? So that was right before half that happened.
I mean, you've got the two momentum swings, the Lewis fumble and then the Crosby field goal might have actually swung it back, right? Okay, you're up two scores going to half. It's 10-0. Maybe that's something to work off of instead. Okay, 7-0, again, within arm's length. And then what do the 49ers do coming out of halftime? They take the ball downfield, take up almost like close to half the third quarter, and they get points out of it. It's not the touchdown that A.J. Dillon scored, but I think really showed that put the pressure on the Packers defense a ton. That had been playing so well, but I think the time possession certainly started to work against them in the second half, and they really got tired, certainly towards the end. I think probably the worst defensive drive was the final one of the game, honestly. But yeah, I think, the defense allowed 3 points, right? They allowed the 49ers to get in field goal range twice. So six points that the defense allowed, right? If like you're saying, Jesse, if special teams is just average, that's enough to win the game. Because the Packers scored 7 points on offense. So, like, in theory, if your defense only allows 6 and you scored 7, that should win you the game, right? But it's, in the waning moments. So we can go all the way down to, what was it? I'm looking at 4:41 left in the game. And I think really this whole end sequence is bad in a lot of fronts, and it's bad on offense. Right? So first off, they went 3 and out. If you just at least get a first down or two, maybe it's different. But then it's funny, Jesse, because we've seen blocked field goals all year, but I looked it up. The Packers didn't allow a blocked punt all season. So as much as we expected special teams to be bad in this game, and once the blocked punt happened, I wasn't surprised at all. It's like, yeah, no, this is Packers special teams this season. But even as bad as they were all season, they could not disappoint us further. They found a new way to lose on special teams by allowing the first blocked punt of the season, and it was returned for a touchdown. So that there you go. I'm really upset, and even though I'm laughing, trying to keep myself together.
I mean, you can't even make this up, you know, in blockbuster movies. You look at Major League and football movies like The Replacements and all that. You can't dream this stuff up, how the Packers special teams just finds ways to disappoint. You know, we talked about it all year. Just don't make mistakes and we'll be okay, right? You don't have to do anything crazy. Just don't make mistakes. And what does this unit do the whole time? One, give up huge returns all game long, like just terrible.
To be fair, Jermichael Hasty's an amazing player, so I will give them that. Like that, what a talent on on offense as a running back. Jermichael Hasty is on special teams, but yeah, that's yeah. It still though.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be starting at the 40 or 50 every time. Yeah, I don't care how good you are. You know, you didn't let the greats do that every single time, unless you played Green Bay Packers this year on special teams. And you know the Aaron Jones play, they make something out of nothing, big huge 75-yard play right before half. And it's boom, blocked. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And that punt, I'm telling you, I had a Patriots fan friend, really close friend of mine. And he texts me. He's like, wouldn't it be something if this gets blocked? And a second later, it got blocked. He's like, I'm so sorry I said that. You can't make it up. It's unbelievable.
Well, honestly, after the blocked field goal, I assumed every kick afterwards was going to be blocked, honestly. So I wasn't even remotely shocked when I saw it happen.
But, and I really wasn't shocked. It's just, it's jaw dropping. Like this is a professional team that is worse than the Bad News Bears. Like everything goes wrong on special teams on cue. It's just like on cue, they're going to do something terrible. Now, like I said, offense didn't show up today, but we had more yardage, more time of possession, you know, won the turnover battle. Did enough. If you just looked at it, not the final score and the way the defense, both defenses played. Like, hey, this game was 7-6, Green Bay win. You know, it's like 1972 all over again. And then you throw the special teams in there, and it's like, oh, my Lord, what happened? So, Bill Belichick always said you have to play all three phases. They really put a lot of effort into special teams. I guess in the past, I never, I'm like, they just got to be good enough, right? I totally changed my opinion on that. It is a huge part of this game, and until Green Bay gets this fixed, because it's been bad for 10 years, I really don't believe they can get it done, because this is such a huge piece to being a championship team, and a lot of it's discipline. So where do you go from here? I'm sure it starts with Mo Drayton, which everybody says is a great guy, but how did you make it out of the locker room that game with still a job? I don't know. But it needs to be cleaned up.
Well, I've talked about it so many times. Like they fired the special teams coordinator last year, right? Like Drayton's supposed to be this like super smart guy that you trust, right? So I'm all for keeping him, because if you've believed in him as a coach, then like to me it just comes down to the players. They don't invest enough in special teams. Like even this game, right? One thing we didn't talk about, the surprise release of Kingsley Keke right before the game, like the week of. And as much as, like, you know, not so good on defense, he was at least playing well on special teams. Like, he was one of the better special teams players. So suddenly you take one of your best special teams, you know, in that case, like offensive line protectors off. Are you so shocked that two kicks got blocked? Probably not. So it's just this proved it wasn't just management, though. This really showed this is on LaFleur too, because he chose to release that player. Like that's his kind of call, right? It's one thing if for Gutekunst not to give you the players to play on special teams, not invest in them in free agency or in the draft, but you had them on your roster and you chose to release them. Even if he's a disappointment on defense, he was still playing well enough on special teams. Now, releasing Isaac Yiadom, I got no problem with that. That guy should not be on a football field whatsoever. But clearly releasing him didn't make the difference, because whoever replaced him wasn't any better, so.
Yeah, I think the Keke thing had nothing to do with performance. I think a lot of stuff went on there. So
if there was a problem and a cancer in the locker room and things are going bad, rumor is he didn't like how he was practicing or how practice was going or something. So it's been really weird. The last month with him has been really weird. So I don't know. I don't blame that as much. Still, when you talk about players, then why don't you keep your starting offensive line out there? If they are blocking kicks that easy, play one more snap with your starting offensive line. It's just as simple as that. You look at the Niners. Right. The Niners put out their guy. You know, Samuel was out there on special teams at a few times. You know, it's the playoffs. Put your best players out there if you want to win. And we didn't. We refused to do that. So it's got to get fixed. I don't know the answer, but it's got. It cannot be this. And the 49er fans were worried about their special teams because they're like 26th in the league. Oh, don't worry about us. We'll trump you every time.
So, and I do want to, I've got more special teams rants to come. I've never done this much special teams research before, but clearly we're investing more in a Jesse than the Packers are. That's the problem. But, the last four sequences to end the game for the Packers were all negative. Three and out on offense. You get so you're backed up, you punt, it gets blocked, returned for a touchdown. You get the ball back, three and out right again. So, and I mean, there was a, I think that was the third down play where Lazard's open underneath. You'll move the chains again. You know, give him, even if you give him two catches that game and both of them move the chains, you can at least look at that better, but no, whatever. And then, unfortunately, we talked about the defense, though. You know, 49ers get the ball back, and the defense just lets them basically march up. Like, and you could tell by, again, the time of possession, they were tired on that drive. Again, it's the consistent three and outs that were happening on offense towards the end of the game. The defense got tired and they started allowing first down on the ground. The 49ers just killed the clock, got in field goal range and won the game. So about as perfect of a drive, that was probably the 49ers' best offensive drive all game. And it's unfortunate that it happened at the end. So I guess, Ryan, we don't want to ignore you completely. Again, the victor go the spoils. You're the one that won, so you should get as much airtime. But what did you think of just get that whole end of game sequence starting and really the three and out before the block punt, but certainly the game tying touchdown on the block punt?
Yeah, I mean, it just became a story of one team executing and the other one not. I mean, like going back, leaving a little further, like with the block field goal, you know, the 49ers turn the ball over when they're driving down, you know, have a chance to score a touchdown, maybe even a field goal, interception for Garoppolo, bad throw, threw it late. You have that big play with Jones, gets him down to field goal range. And it was interesting watching that blocked field goal because when you watch the replays, you see the defensive lineman basically chopping the arm of the protector for the field goal protection team, and it allows Jimmy Ward to come in untouched and gets the block. And you're like, wow, okay, like that's interesting. Ends up being the same guy, Jordan Willis, who gets the actual block on the punt. And it's the most strangest thing because you see the sack on Rodgers, and then they go for a punt. And I'm thinking, okay, the 49ers are an obvious punt return formation. You know, they have two guys kind of in the middle of the field ready for the return. And Willis just bull rushes the long snapper directly into the path of the punter. And it was just the strangest thing because, you know, a split second before the play happens, you're like, okay, punt, and let's see what the offense can do. And then you see it happening and you realize, oh, this might get blocked. It does. And then after that, to see Aaron Rodgers and the offense just kind of shrink at that point, it was almost as if they were kind of shell-shocked, like just kind of surprised at what was happening. And then, yeah, he misses that wide receiver. He misses Lazard over the middle. And then once they kicked the ball back, then it kind of felt with the way that the offense was moving suddenly, as much hate as Jimmy Garoppolo gets, one of the things that he has done very well throughout his career with the 49ers is running like 2-minute offenses, which is basically what they ran at the end of the game. It was their 4-minute offense where he's able to kind of dink and dunk. That's what you would have expected to see Aaron Rodgers do on that last drive for them. But I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo hit his receivers. They got open. They were able to get the ball down the field. And I'll be honest with you. It was one of those when you're seeing him do that, you're just kind of telling yourself, like, all right, well, I think they learned from the last time these two teams played. You know, they got the clock all the way down and they made sure that they held onto the football. So it was chaotic of an ending. But at the same time, it just kind of summed up what happened after halftime between the two teams. It was as if we saw the 49ers become like the team that's expecting to win. Like they know that they're going to win And then the Packers just seem to play scared and just play to try to not make any more mistakes, which is really the wrong way to play when you're in the playoffs and you're in this kind of a situation.
Yeah, you got that. That's the mistake, right? Is playing not to have play mistakes, but you got to have the short memory and just try and execute each play to the most optimal of your performance. Like, hey, let's succeed at this play. You really have to just take it one play at a time, and you know, if your offense lineman block properly, if you're the quarterback, pass it to the right player, and not so much worry about making the turnover at that point, because you really have nothing to lose. Well, you have everything to lose the game. I really can't say that you have nothing to lose, but yeah, the Packers lost the game, so there we go.
Right, and you know, like everything Ryan's saying, you know, Green Bay left the door open, and guess what? The Niners came in and took it. When Green Bay, when you talk about playing scared, they had every opportunity to shut that door. You get up by two scores, this game is essentially over, especially the way the defense is playing. You know, it's going to take the Niners kind of out of their game plan later in the game. And they never close the deal. You know, it's just, it's your closer that comes in and he walks the first two guys. Well, the next guy coming up is probably going to put the ball in play and move him over. I always throw the baseball stuff in. I don't know. I'm sorry. But, and also I think a major piece of this game that changed when A.J. Dillon got hurt, Matt LaFleur never came out of what you use A.J. Dillon as your hammer, right? And then he uses Aaron Jones, which I love Aaron Jones, but they're not the same player. You know, there's 50 pounds difference in these men. And he was doing the same kind of running that you do with Dillon. And it was first down, run right into the teeth of that defense. Well, what did that do? If you got a yard, you were lucky. You know, and then you're already playing behind the chains with a quarterback that couldn't get back in rhythm. So I know I just circled back to play calling and everything else, but yeah, is the team that wanted it won. And I hate to say that because Green Bay, who talked all year, how this is our year and it's supposed to be the last dance, and you'd think it'd be all gas, no break. And it wasn't, it really wasn't. So, and I hate that because it just seems like it was all talk and people that want to talk crap about it. I can't argue that. So that's a tough pill to swallow.
They wanted the last dance, but they ended up at the wrong ballroom without their dancing shoes. So
there you go. I like it. Well, I don't like it, but good analogy.
No, I don't like it either. again, offense inexcusable that they only scored 10 points, but in a game that was a 3-point game, 13-10, it's also inexcusable that special teams swung 10 points, whether it's the missed field goal that, you know, the 3 points the Packers didn't get, or allowing the block punt returned for a touchdown, which is 7. Sucks that the more words you add, the worse it gets. Part of me thought, you know, my initial reaction is, okay, yeah, the 49ers played great defense. Rodgers didn't play well enough, but also not really on him. And this is all on special teams. The more I've kind of thought back, yeah, there is definitely blame to the offense, whether it's the quarterback, offensive play calling, but inexcusably, this special teams unit was awful. We look at it all year. So I looked at Football Outsiders special teams DVOA, defense adjusted value over average. That's kind of how they measure a lot of things. Anyway, so they measure their defense or their special teams DVOA. Packers were zero being average. The Packers were minus 5.2%, which was worse than the league. For context, the Ravens, who we know at long time, you know, John Harbaugh, one of the best special teams coordinators in the NFL for, you know, before he was a head coach, and the Ravens special teams unit still excelling well, and also team investing in them properly, like the rookie Devin Duvernay a couple years ago, who, guess what, an all-pro returner this year. If he was on the Packers with their special teams guarding around him, he probably wouldn't be an all-pro returner. But again, that's not the point of the rant. The point of the rant is, the Ravens were plus 5.3% DVOA special teams, and that was first in the league. So as good as the Ravens are good, that's how bad the Packers are bad. And that was almost the worst way to think about it. And I look back, like, how bad is the special teams compared to what the Packers have had? It is the worst that they've had in quite a long time, certainly the worst since the 2010 season Super Bowl win. Really, their three worst seasons have been three of the last four. 2018, minus 4.1%. DVOA special teams, the year McCarthy got fired. LaFleur's first year, they were actually 0.1%. They were just above average, which is what all we ask for, right? That year they ranked 18th. But then last season, minus 2.7. Fire special teams coordinator, what happens? Minus 5.2 again, like I said. Like, absolutely atrocious. And part of me is like, can a team win a Super Bowl with that bad of special teams? And I look back at the Super Bowl winning team in 2010. They were minus 2.4. They were 26th in the league. So it's not like their special teams were great. So, you know, okay, maybe they could win with a bad special teams unit. In fact, in the playoffs, their DVOA for special teams was -14.1. They were last of all the playoff teams. So bad special teams. But for some reason, the team was good enough to win. But like again, -2.4 is still not as bad as it's been two of the last three seasons. You've had worse DVOAs than that year on special teams. So, and I looked it up, and they, you know, Football Outsiders has a bunch of historical DVOA. Of all the teams that ever won a Super Bowl, only one team has a worse special teams DVOA than what the Packers did this year in 2021 with a -5.2. It was the Rams at -7.4. The Rams in 1951. The 1951 Rams. That's the only team with as bad, or in this case, worse special teams than the Packers this year that won a Super Bowl. Now, I was almost a little surprised. 15 Super Bowl champions, or not even, this isn't even Super Bowl. This is NFL champions in total, because we're talking 51 Rams. 15 NFL champions had a negative special teams DVOA the season they won. So, you know, So it kind of shows, though, it doesn't happen all that often, right? We were talking, if we're going back to championship games in the 30s, so not quite 100 years, but, you know, close to 90 years of football, and only 15 of those times has a team with a below-average special teams unit won. And, I think that Rams team is bad at -7.4, but it's kind of a gap. The next worst one's actually the 2006 Colts, -3.6. We know, I mean, if anyone remembering that Super Bowl, they allowed the opening kickoff return for a touchdown, right? So clearly a bad special teams playing a Bears team without a really good quarterback, so they were able to overcome that, right? And they won the Super Bowl that year. All was fine. I just want to see that Rams team, though, in 51, like how it compared to the Packers. You know, the field goal weren't great. They were 13 for 24 that season. They missed four PATs. They allowed three punt returns. Touchdowns, one of their punts was blocked that season. Their kickoff return yards, where it was really bad, 1,478, which the Packers this year allowed 1,283. We also have to think that was a 12-game season, so pretty bad. Funny enough that neither team allowed a kickoff return touchdown with all that yardage. That's hilarious to me. Which, of all the things the Packers did, they didn't allow a kickoff to be returned for a touchdown this year. So good on the Packers, even though the kickoff returning, and well, in both directions was pretty atrocious. But yeah, so the kudos to the 51 Rams for winning a championship with such awful special teams.
Wow, that's some great stats. Depressing, very depressing that we're in that conversation, but great homework. That's impressive.
And I mean, I have some homework that I did that actually might cheer us up a little bit. And it's funny, even that Rams team in 51 isn't one of the 20th worst special teams units ever. Like, there are some absolutely atrocious special teams like throughout history. I looked at the three worst just to get some context here. The third worst ever was the 52 Bears. They had a -12.8 special teams DVOA, allowed four touchdown returns, two on punt returns, two on kickoff returns. Jesse, this is the one, though, that gets me. They were 8 for 28 on field goals that year, 28.6%.
Just go for it.
Well, and doesn't that just make you feel so much better seeing the Bears were that bad?
Yeah. I mean, totally different era, but yeah, I guess I can run with that if anybody picks on the Packers special teams, right?
It's funny, though. They were 100% on PATs, but they could not make field goals. I don't know. Baffles me.
Crazy. That's crazy.
The second worst is the 84 Giants, and that's like Bill Belichick's on that team. I think by that point he was the defensive coordinator, so he wasn't the special teams coordinator anymore. So, you know, you lose Belichick as your special team coordinator, your special teams get bad. Imagine that. But yeah, -13.3 special teams DVOA on a team that was like 2 years away from winning a championship. So that's interesting that they were that bad. Four blocked punts that season. 17 for 33 on field goals, not great, but you're at least around 50%, not below 30, like the 52 Bears. And they allowed two punt returns for touchdown. The worst ever special teams, apparently, is the 2000 Buffalo Bills, -15.4. And I look at, like, I think the big one for them was the difference in return yardage for themselves and what they allowed. Not so much on kickoffs. Kickoff returns, they actually produced over 1,200 kickoff return yards, but allowed over 1,500 and 2 touchdowns. So they, like, even though they were good at returning yardage, they were still much worse at allowing. They only produced 190 punt return yards that year and allowed 544 and a punt return touchdown. So, like, Bill's defense or Bill's special teams that year, completely atrocious. But that kickoff return yardage wasn't so different. Like, compare that to the, like, again, it was 1,500 allowed to 1,200 scored. So you're minus 300. Bad, but you look at that 51 Rams team I keep mentioning, they were at 1,478 allowed, only 826 produced. A minus, was it, minus 600 and, I wrote it down somewhere. It's over 600. Pretty bad. Now we get back to the depressing part. The 2021 Packers, as far as I looked it up, have the absolute worst difference in kickoff return yardage allowed and produced. Again, they allowed over 1,200 yards, 1,283 kickoff return yards. They only produced 531, minus 752. As far as, again, I didn't look at every single team in NFL history. I looked at, this, like, again, these teams with the worst DVOA historically on special teams, and I kind of focused on all that. That Rams team is the only one that came close to that bad. So if there's any area where the Packers are absolutely dreadful, it's that difference on return yards, which we know they, and I mean, Ryan, you referenced it, right? Like, you know, a simple arm chop on one player, another player runs free. They just get bullied at the point of attack on special teams, and it happened all season.
Well, I think the big part is, too, Mason Crosby has a dead leg and he can't get into the end zone because the Packers are touched. They're getting a touchback almost every time. But when Mason Crosby's kicking off, he's putting it in play. So right there, they're gaining yards when you're starting at 25. So maybe the stats a little skewed, but regardless, it was epically bad. I mean, I don't think the 49ers started behind the 35 any time during the game. That's really sad. I mean, kickoff wise.
So when you were talking, Jessica was just talking about like the kickoffs and everything. Leading up to the game, a lot of the talk came up from talking about the Packers special teams, how it wouldn't be surprising seeing, you know, Deebo get put in there for the kickoff returns because of how poor that unit has been. And honestly, that was the catalyst. I think it was the opening kickoff for the second half, and he brought it back to roughly the 50-yard line. I mean, one block, and he could have gone all the way. So seeing stuff like that, and then again, it comes down, you guys have talked about, it's a personnel thing. When the 49ers have had bad special teams, it's because they haven't had the players, the quality of players on special teams. And they've been having some good drafts. Like right now, they have about a half a dozen or so players who are maybe like second or closer to third string guys on defense and offense. But, you know, they're guys who are good enough to really play on other teams and maybe get more time with injuries happening. But guys like Hufanga, who got the recovery, guys like Willis, who started at times last year, you know, guys who are actually talented players who are on special teams. Put your better players on special teams and you'll see better special teams.
Ryan, do you want to come coach special teams for the Green Bay Packers next year?
maybe not this time of the year. Maybe not this time of the year.
Well, he knows the team's not going to give him good players. He doesn't want to be the Packers special teams coach. No one wants that job. No, it's we need a GM that's going to invest in special teams player. That's what it's going to take.
Yeah, I mean, but how your special teams is usually your backup guys, right? You might have one or two like specialists, you know, like for kick returns and stuff. But like you're saying, like if you're that bad in your blocking stuff, keep your starting line out there. I mean, if you have to at times, yeah, you're right. I mean, you think you could find a certain guy that can help something.
Anyway, so enough about the Packers. Ryan, you are the 49ers managing editor, so let's do focus on that. They're traveling to L.A. As the Rams host the NFC Championship game. 49ers have a recent good track record, though, against this Rams team.
Yeah, heading into the game, they've won the last six meetings overall. So it's been 3 years, basically, of just, you know, being the Rams. Part of it, honestly, it comes down to McVay has had, you know, Sean McVay has had some issues occasionally getting his offense running. And when it comes down to the 49ers offense, they seem to be able to do just enough to win the game. And part of that is the fact that you have players on both rosters who match up very well. But the players on the 49ers roster tends to match up just a little bit, just slightly better against the Rams than they do against other competition. I mean, you look at the rest of the division, the 49ers this year, the only two wins they had in the division were against the Rams. You know, last year they basically, you know, had three wins and three, you know, two of them came from the Rams. So this tells you that this game is going to be tough because it's tough being a team, beating a team three times in 1 year. You know, statistically, at some point, the Rams are going to have to win a game. Interesting thing is, I was just reading an article where StubHub just came out and said that right now, about 60 to 65% of the all sales that they've had, StubHub has, for Sunday's game have been from either like Northern California, or they're basically projecting that they're going to be 49er fans. So right now, it seems like there's going to be more 49er fans for Sunday's game than there was on a week 18.
I also, to that, I mean, how many people in LA are 49ers fans, like in the city of Los Angeles itself, right? I mean, this Rams team hasn't been there for a while. You've had this franchise that was historically great, with, you know, anyone who grew up kind of in the Joe Montana era, even with the Rams and the Chargers in town, might still be 49ers anyway. So that was one thing I kind of didn't get, like, oh, only people in LA can buy tickets. Like, well, maybe you've got 49ers fans in LA too. Like, that's just one of those fan bases where you've got people, you know, coast to coast, really, nation, even international. And I'm sure there's tons of Canadians that are 49ers fans too, right? So that's one that I didn't really think the Rams could do as much as they think they could have to prevent 49ers fans from going there, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw that kind of the notice pop up, it kind of made me laugh because of the fact that, you know, like how easy it is. Once, you know, SoFi Stadium opened, a lot of 49er fans were just already excited because it's such a nice stadium that they knew they were going to be making the trips there anyway. There's a lot of 49er fans in the country. There's a lot of them in Arizona, you know, all over the place. And they do travel, especially for the postseason. Funny story about those types of restrictions. Seattle basically did something very similar, I believe, before the 2013 NFC title game, when the 49ers went up there and they ended up falling short. But what they did to prohibit the ticket sales to 49er fans was to basically require tickets to be purchased basically in person. So it kind of prevented a lot of them from being able to go there and then pick up the tickets. With this one, I mean, you had guys like Joe Staley and Frank Gore offering to like buy tickets. You had a lot of 49er fans offering to, you know, like, hey, I'll buy them for you. Just, you know, send me the money or tell me where you want and I'll go ahead and get these seats for you. A lot of the 49er fans that I follow, and there's quite a bit of them, a lot of them are going. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see 60, you know, 50, 55% and up, you know, in that stadium. And when in week 18, when the 49ers played the Rams the last time, the Rams had to go to a silent count towards the end of the game in their own building. So it'll be interesting. The fan part of it is just kind of more of like something fun to kind of to think about, but just thinking about the game itself, it's just, you know, it's going to be a very tough game. And the Rams are still the favorites. Let's be honest. The Rams on paper should be better. But we'll see how that kind of shakes out.
I mean, the Packers had a much better quarterback than the 49ers did. And that didn't make a difference here. So I think that's maybe, you look at the rosters, to me, like, that's probably what is still the biggest differences, because the 49ers do have weapons offensively. They've got a good offensive line, a little banged up, but same for the Rams. And both defenses are tremendous. I've tracked the goal line data from all year, and both teams allowed 20% of specifically on passing touchdowns inside their own 5-yard line. That was the best in the league. So they tied to be the best defensive unit in that regard. So both teams, I think, will have a better chance running. And maybe right now that edge does go to the 49ers, but can that quarterback difference make up enough? And again, we'll see. It didn't for the Packers. Maybe it will for the Rams, maybe not. But I think either way, you're going to get a really great defense in the Super Bowl representing the NFC, and that will make that dynamic interesting, because you've kind of got some good offenses in the AFC, which we can get to, unless Jesse, you had any thoughts about the 49ers-Rams game.
No, I'm the same book. You know, throw out the rosters and everything. They're in the same division. These teams know each other. Coaches know each other. It's gonna be a dogfight. You know, weather won't be an issue, so that's not gonna matter. Yeah, like Ryan said, on paper, you know, the Rams team has got a really like sweet overall roster, but the Niners are no joke either. Rams are, I think, offense is starting to peak a little bit, but now they're beat up on the O-line really bad, and
how do you beat good quarterbacks and good teams? Get pressure. And the Niners can do it with four. So I think you're going to have a really good game.
Well, speaking of pressure, that's certainly what the Bengals faced coming off their first playoff win in over 30 years, traveling to Tennessee to take on the Titans and end up emerging victorious 19-16 in spite of the fact that they gave up 9 sacks. Now, not all that's on the offensive line. I think there's, you know, a couple of those that similar to what you were saying, Jesse, with Aaron Rodgers, right? And Burrow maybe holding on too long. But Burrow still got the win in spite of the fact he didn't throw a touchdown pass. Funny that it's Garoppolo, too. Actually, on that Saturday, Ryan Tannehill ended up being the only quarterback to throw a touchdown pass, but he also threw in 3 interceptions. So in a 3-point game, those 3 turnovers did loom large. So Bengals move on. And yeah, Joe Burrow going to the AFC Championship game, which I think is, you know, on the other side, it was Bills, Chiefs. You were always going to have a good offense, like a high tempo passing offense anyway. You get this, you know, yet certainly now 2 teams there regardless because of the Bengals making it. So the Bengals in the AFC Championship game. Any thoughts about that game, which, Jesse, again, you hinted at earlier, all these games came down to the final play, all 4 of them on divisional weekend, and certainly the Bengals-Titans game was no exception with a last-second field goal.
Yeah, I love Cigar Joe, and you know, the Bengals, they're the dark horse. I had a friend that passed away that was a diehard Bengals fan, so I'm pulling for them. I just don't see it. I don't think their time is yet. Hey, the Chiefs have been to the Super Bowl the last two seasons for a reason. They're going to be tough to beat at home. So I think they win the game. I don't think you're going to see a crazy shootout like you did with the Bills and Chiefs, you know, an all-time classic. But I think Cincinnati keeps it competitive, you know, for a while. But, man, those sacks, you're not going to be able to take 9 this week. You're just not, because you give that ball back to that offense that many times, it's going to get ugly. So I got the Chiefs winning that.
Well, I mean, 19 points, right? Like, Burrow's not going to win a game against the Chiefs if he doesn't throw touchdowns, multiple touchdowns, because the Chiefs beat the Bills 42-36, and by the end, like, both teams were kind of scoring at will. Like, and it's like, what an effort by the Bills, and they still fell short. Like, just like what it takes, right, to beat this Chiefs team is you have to be incredible, right? So it's, you know, you've barely beaten the Raiders, and the Titans kind of did their best to give this game away. I kind of agree. I think the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl to fight one of these great defenses, whether it's the Rams or 49ers. So it'll be 3 years in a row where, if that is the case, where Patrick Mahomes is going to have to go up against an elite defense in the Super Bowl. 1-1 so far. We'll find out. I mean, maybe we won't. Maybe the Bengals actually get the upset. We don't find that out. But I guess you want to end this episode talking about the Bills Chiefs game, because, man, what an incredible performance.
Yeah, you can go first, Ryan. You can give us your opinion on it, because I thought it was crazy.
yeah, actually, that game was intense. I mean, you know, just, you feel bad for Josh Allen, because of the fact that, look, you basically gave the ball to Patrick Mahomes. Yes, you're giving it to Patrick Mahomes, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Bills' offense was ranked like number 1 in the league, or defense, excuse me. So you're looking at that and you're saying, okay, defense, you literally just have to hold them out for a few seconds. That's it. You know, we can get into the whole squib kick at the end, whether they should have or shouldn't have, whatever. But I mean, at the end of the day, you get 13 seconds and the other team needed to kick a field goal to win. And they basically, the defense couldn't do it. And I guess I'm one of the few folks who are not as upset as I could be with this overtime rule, because of the fact that, like, hey, if your defense could have done its job and it helped them to a field goal, you would have had a chance, but you gave up a touchdown. So I wasn't too upset with how it ended, but more or less it was a really fun game. I loved watching Josh Allen, and the things that he can do was just amazing. I'll be honest with you, coming out of college, I was very worried that he would not be able to get better and become a quarterback that he is now. I don't know if anyone really saw that possibly happening, but I was worried that he'd be below average because of his accuracy from when he had in Wyoming. But he's become so good throwing the ball, that, you know, like, that team is getting better. Hopefully, you know, they can continue their run. But I mean, Kansas City is just kind of like that like monster that just doesn't die. You can see so many flaws, and then you look at this week's game and you're just kind of like, okay, this feels like an inevitability that they're going to go again. But I mean, we could be surprised. This Chiefs team could be worn out defensively as well. Like, If you're pulling for Cincinnati, then that's all you're hoping for, is that this, you know, Bills game just wore them out emotionally and maybe physically, and they're just not going to be the same for this week.
This is the wrong podcast to talk about squib kicks, because Jesse and I have been asking for more touchbacks all season. So if it was the Packers, I guarantee you that was the right decision, because trust the defense more than the special teams, especially against the Chiefs, because, you know, they can just a dynamic return. You know, you squib kick it, maybe they return it to, and you know, even better position. Maybe they return it for a touchdown. It doesn't even go to overtime, right? So I'm okay with Sean McDermott making the statement, we're going to trust the defense. Because you mentioned to Ryan how good the defense was. So that's my only two cents that I'll give there. Because I really have no complaints about that game. Man, what a game. But Jesse, any final thoughts before we head out of here?
No, I mean, you guys really covered it. It was fun to watch. I'm glad that my team wasn't in that one, because my heart can't take this crap. And I already had enough upset this week. But that was a good one to finish the weekend. Kind of with Ryan on the overtime stuff, you know, don't get there. But that was fun football, guys. It really was. It was good to see. Hopefully we get two games like that this week. And Ryan, good luck to your team.
Yeah, and I'll leave with this last comment. It took 70 years to change the rule to where an opening possession field goal in overtime won the game. Like that, how it used to be, right? And they just changed that just, what, less than a decade ago? Maybe a decade ago? So, and I mean, there was playoff NFL football since the 30s. So it took them so long to change. I doubt there's going to be much change. I think like they've already voted for it. I prefer the CFL overtime, but at this point, I'm okay with it being the way it is. I, again, prefer that than a field goal could end it on the opening drive. I don't like that. And I'm glad that at least it has to be a touchdown. So I think the validity is there. But thank you very much for coming on, Ryan. And as Jesse said, good luck. Again, go win it all. Have Jimmy G win a Super Bowl, cause complete chaos in the NFL. That's great. Please. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing. That'd be a great problem to have. What to do with Jimmy. But yeah, I'm just hoping for a good weekend. And I'll be honest with you, you know, like getting into the playoffs as a 49er fan was good enough. And then beating Dallas and then all Green Bay, it's like, hey, yeah, sure. I really am pulling for them to win this week. But I mean, whatever happens to me, this has been a fun postseason already.
And of course, Ryan, let the people know where they can find and follow you if they want to get more of your great content.
Yeah, definitely. So they're fullpresscoverage.com as usual. Full Press 49ers. Go ahead and follow us there. And also at Ryan Advertorada. It's right now it's football season. So I will have a little confession to make. I did not watch that game live. I knew it would be close. I did not want to deal with that stress. I went to watch Sing 2 with my 3-year-old daughter. And every time that she asked to use to go do a bathroom break, I kept checking. I was listening to the radio and watching the game. So when they actually kicked the game-winning field goal was as the credits were rolling. So I started kind of yelling out loud at the movie theater. So I probably won't be back there for a while.
All right, so Sing 2 was worth it. Great to hear. Great way to sing those praises. And if you want to sing our praises, or criticize us, of course, we take all forms of interactions, but you can do all that on Twitter at @FPC_Packers. Also, your co-host individually, I'm at @SenRasez. Jesse's at Hall_JHall1212. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app to get all the great written content from the 49ers, from us, the Packers. You know, Jesse and I both written articles this week. And also, shout out to PA the Second. On Twitter at @PA_II official for letting us use the song Nah You as our intro and outro music. So, Jesse, any final thoughts for the listeners?
Yeah, this one hurts. This one's going to burn for a little bit. Let it. That's what fans do, right? It's going to be a crazy offseason regardless. We'll cover that. And as always, the Pack will be back, so go Pack, go.
Yeah, we'll let that chant and cheer ring out through the entire offseason here on the Full Press Packers Pod.